go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This is the 18th day of December 2012. This is the Horn, headonradionetwork.com. A little internet experiment in what we like to call conversation radio. Available most easily at headonradionetwork.com, but also available on portable platforms like TuneIn radio app and Tuner internet radio app and Stitcher internet radio app, available on Roku devices, available at Streama.com and Dar.fm. It's getting easier and easier and easier to participate in the media of the future right here in the today. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Titanic Tuesday, so named for the Titanic wits of the right wing, the Titanic brains, brainstesses, occasioned by the afternoon or morning when our buddy Jim heard a local right winger explaining that there are fossilized shellfish in the rock strata of West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yeah, really. So, Jim reminds me before showtime that that same individual declared that the Newtown, Connecticut Sandy Hook Elementary incident will escalate firearm sales. Well, it might. Fact of the matter is, it might. Because that's the way these gun goobers respond. You know, these political babies who are forever guarding us against, I don't know, zombies, alien invaders. It's kind of hard to say. But yeah, they're out there on America's frontiers making sure that we feel safe. Yeah. Even though we didn't ask them to, and even though they don't in the first place. It's worthy of examination, and I tweeted a little something late last night about it just because dude was getting on my last nerve. I happened to be flicking across the TV channels in search of something, anything, to sort of Calgon take me away from reality. Christmas movie, you know, whatever. And like a dum-dum, I stopped on Chicken Noodle News. And there was Piers Morgan debating, you can hear the quotation marks around debating, right? Debating with some gun weasel from Virginia, who had crowed that the AR-14 Bushmaster is a blast to shoot. It's just so fun. Now listen for a minute, and I got that same sensation that I get whenever I hear somebody on our side of the political debate inviting on a right winger. Because my immediate first thought is, why? What does this guy have to contribute to our discussion? And in almost every, I'd say 99.9% of the time, the answer is absolutely nothing. There's nothing going on here but grandstanding. See, horse's rear end gun goober said, well, we're talking about a firearm here, Piers. And Piers said, oh, don't talk like that to me. My brother is a colonel in the Royal Air Force. Mandrake, in the name of the 13 colonies and the Continental Congress and Your Majesty the Queen, get over here and feed me. I'd be happy to, Jack, but you see, this string in my leg is gone. And it was just silly. And I realized that the gun goobers, well, I knew this beforehand, but it was kind of an in-your-face reminder. The gun goobers have nothing to contribute to this conversation. Because at the bottom line, the gun goobers are a bunch of proto-Confederates. And we need to understand them this way. The gun goobers who say that they're going to protect us against the overarching reason, your arms and legs and stuff of the government. You know, people like Larry Pratt, darling of the right-wing militia movement, he of Gun Owners of America, whom Chris Matthews had on his show, again, as nothing more than some sort of sensationalist window dressing, so that Pratt could say, as noted last night, Matthews said, so Larry, it's not just the right to use guns to protect your homes, it's the right to take on your government. The government has been overboard. You know, the government goes overboard, like when they give the women folk the vote, and then the colored people, and wanting them homos to get all married up and everything. Overboard. No, he didn't say all that, but the fact of the matter is, he is the darling of right-wing hate groups who find that the National Rifle Association is just entirely too liberal. Right? And you realize when that goober or another goober has been invited onto a program that it's wrestling. The Red Marvel versus the Blue Marvel. The Red Marvel will win Friday at Barton Civic Center, and then we'll move down the road a little ways to Cherokee, and the Blue Marvel will win over the Red Marvel on Saturday night. It's wrestling. And these guys really are proto-Confederates. Because the whole meme about getting after the government does not historically stem from the American Revolution, because the government were the local colonial governments and for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part, the beef was with the king and parliament in England, who wanted the people of these colonies to actually pay a little bit for their upkeep. But we're not going down that historical road. The trope of the overreaching government stems from the various dissatisfactions of the several states, beginning with New Hampshire, and most pointedly by South Carolina through the middle of the 19th century, and the ringing cry of states' rights! See, Larry Pratt would have had no problem looking at Robert E. Lee saying, you know, yeah, you're staying with your dad. You're going to fight for Virginia. I got the absolute states' rights, baby. Anyone who sits around talking about taking up arms against the government of we, the people of the United States, who are sitting here trying to make a more perfect union, well, that bastard's got treason in his heart. And that's a fact. And so when the Piers Morgans of the world and the Chris Matthews's of the world invite the Larry Pratts of the world and whoever the goober was that was on with Piers Morgan, he couldn't apparently get Larry Pratt, that or maybe he didn't feel like he was up to the argument. Please know that it's grandstanding. It's showmanship. Because if anything is becoming obvious, it is that the NRA has absolutely nothing to add to this conversation. Nonetheless, and I have no idea how they got my email address, but media@nrahq.org sent out the following news release from 11250 Waples, Waples, Mill Road, 11250 Waples, Mill Road, Fairfax, Virginia, 22030. They have, yanked their heads from out the sand or quit playing possum or whatever it was they've been doing for the last several days. It took them that long to come up with this. NRA statement. The National Rifle Association of America is made up of 4 million moms and dads, sons and daughters, and we were shocked, saddened, and heartbroken by the news of the horrific and senseless murders in Newtown. How about that? No mention there of the various and sundry gun manufacturers who provide the NRA with the vast bulk of its money. Out of respect for the families, and as a matter of common decency, we have given time for mourning, prayer, and a full investigation of the facts before commenting. Really, they've given that. They've deigned to provide that to we... hoi polloi. So since they put out this press release, I guess we can assume that the time for mourning, prayer, and a full investigation of the facts is now over, because the NRA says so. The NRA is prepared to offer meaningful contributions, usually about $3,000 or $4,000 at a time, to help make sure this never happens again. This what, NRA? I'm guessing what they mean by this, and this is a slippery little word. It's one of those context problems. The NRA is prepared to offer meaningful contributions to make sure this never happens again. The this in question is not the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. The this is talking, is all this talk about banning certain weapons. The NRA is planning to hold a major news conference in the Washington, D.C. area on Friday, December 21st. If the world is still here. Notice how we scheduled it? We're sharp that way. Details will be released to the media at the appropriate time if the planet still exists. Okay, I added if the planet still exists and the part about the end of the world. But really, they're going to have themselves some sort of a news conference on December the 21st, and they will tell the media where to be when the media need to know where to be. Because by God, they are armed to the effing teeth, they are the NRA, and they will determine who needs to know what in this here country. Aren't they a charming bunch? Just darling. And I thought I would bring up the NRA thing. Because I've got a follow-up for you. I want to share some text with you. You remember last night when the rest of the world was ballyhooing the fact that West Virginia Junior Senator Joe Manchin, D. Manchin, had said something about wanting a conversation about bad movies and guns. And everybody said, Everybody said, why, look, even Joe Manchin, a conservative Democrat from a state like West Virginia where they give babies guns the minute they're born, wants to have a common sense solution to gun violence. And I was one of the only people in the United States of America who said, wait a minute. I know Joe. He ain't saying nothing like what you think he's saying. Well, I have proof. I have proof in the form of an article by one Mannix Porterfield. No, really, it's his name. Of the Beckley Register Herald. A news rag, which I generally would not offend my parakeet by putting in the bottom of its cage. And Mannix, right? I don't know. What was the Mannix music? Mannix writes, horrified by the Connecticut school massacre, Senator Joe Manchin wants a free and open dialogue on Americans' culture of violence. Which American? Mannix. Copy editing. It's a groovy thing coming to a newspaper near you. By the way, this newspaper is owned by the Alabama Teachers Pension Retirement System, which owns a bunch of golf courses and also owns a bunch of newspapers, and is shockingly right-wing. Manchin wants a free and open dialogue on American apostrophe S culture of violence. Either we've got an extra N there, or there's an unidentified American who has a culture of violence. I don't know which. As some famous wag once said, it is always good for an editor to have a pimp for a brother-in-law so as to have someone to look up to. But in this case, they do come in handy. Horrified by the Connecticut school massacre, Senator Joe Manchin wants a free and open dialogue on Americans' culture of violence, focusing not only on firearms, but mental illness, violent video games, and Hollywood's obsession with blood and gore.
Really?
Well, yeah, really, because I told you all of that yesterday. I told you that this was, that what Joe Manchin was doing was water carrying for the National Rifle Association. Nobody else that wanted to get out there and defend the NRA, but Joe said, I'll do it. For I have proudly borne the NRA membership card, and I have proudly blown away sheaves of paper stapled to innocent trees. Manchin emphasized in a telephone news conference that he is in no way... Now, see, listen. Everybody thought he was saying something about assault weapons yesterday, didn't they? I said, wait a minute. I'm not blowing my own horn here. Head on, radionetwork.com. That's, yeah. The horn. But I caught this where a lot of progressives of goodwill were kind of flat-footed. Manchin emphasized in a telephone news conference that he is in no way asking for a ban on so-called assault rifles. despite one news source's report saying he endorses New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg's call for one. Quote, "Oh no, that's awful," he said of the report. "You know me," this is more quoting, "that's not true. This is a kind of craziness. You have people that want to use the scare tactics and extremes, trying to draw a political wedge." Draw it? Doesn't one drive a wedge instead of draw it? Language has never been... Well, but he says things in a real nice way, so we just kind of overlook it. "You have people that want to use the scare tactics and extremes, trying to draw a political wedge when we're trying to have an open, honest dialogue." About what, Joe? For the love of Christ, about what? Instead, Manchin said he agrees with Senator Joseph Lieberman, icon, in seeking a blue ribbon panel to discuss all facets of violence with all interested parties at the table. Now, I don't want to make it sound like I sit around here in a tattered old purple robe with frayed embroidered moons and stars on it, and a cracked magic eight ball whose answer is forever as answer hazy, ask again later. But when you know stuff, you know stuff. And this, you knew this was, it was present in what he said to NBC yesterday. I love the way he describes the report saying that he endorses a call for an assault weapons ban. Oh no! That's awful! You know me? That's not true! This is a kind of craziness! You know, calling for an assault weapons ban. We're trying to have an open, honest dialogue! I'm not supporting a thing except open dialogue! In other words, we can keep talking while more children get gunned down. And Joe will just talk and talk and talk and pull together a blue ribbon panel. And of course, Joe Lieberman would have to be on the blue ribbon panel. For the sake of decency, can't we do that without villainizing somebody? And what we mean by somebody here is the NRA. For the sake of decency, can't we do that without villainizing the NRA and putting them in a corner and trying to put a... No, Joe, you didn't. Okay, funny voices off. He really said this. Let's see, this is yesterday. The date of December. Okay, so it happened yesterday, 1760. This comment was made 3 days at tops on Friday. No, 3 days tops. Maybe a few hours more than 3 days after the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary. Joe Manchin said, "For the sake of decency, can't we do that without villainizing somebody and putting them in a corner and trying to put a target on people, if you will?" A target on people. I told you, the NRA feel like they are the victims here, when they, in fact, feel themselves imbued with, endowed with, and privileged to tell us how we will protect our children. Putting a target on people. A longtime hunter and member of the National Rifle Association with an A political rating from the National Rifle Association, certainly not from any common sense or common decency kind of organization. Manchin cautioned against those that would seek to ostracize the nation's largest gun safety and ownership organization. See how the propaganda works? This is what you call catapult. It's what we like to call catapulting the propaganda. Those that would seek to ostracize the nation's largest gun safety and ownership organization, not the largest gun manufacturing lobby. or the nation's largest organization advocating for more scenarios just like the one that brought us the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. There are people waiting to pounce on them. He being Manchin, said. Waiting to pounce on them. These evil bastards at the NRA have hounded people from office, have done everything they could to hogtie any law enforcement attempt to keep these horrors from transpiring, have resisted background check legislation, have even resisted laws and defeated laws that said you can only buy one deadly engine of death per month. I mean, come on, Cletus. You can't keep it down to one a month? Jesus Christ, in 48 out of 50 states, you can't buy one doobie a month. But in a bunch of those states, if you want to buy 60 guns, you can. Because we can't even limit firearm purchases to one per month. Because, you know, freedom! Wolverines! More quoting from Joe Manchin. There are people waiting to villainize them. That is the wrong approach. You're not going to get any meaningful changes or even meaningful dialogue if you're going to demonize people you should be working with. That's the problem in Washington today. We have guilt by association. Well, it is an association, National Rifle Association, and it is hella guilty. So, you know, if the shoe, Joe... I'm not waiting to villainize the NRA. I despise the NRA. I loathe the NRA all the way down to my subcellular level. If I had an impressionable little child and I saw Wayne LaPierre walking down the street, I would cover the child's eyes and get him across the street as quickly as possible so that the child would not even so much as have his or her eyes polluted by the obscene visage of the blood-soaked, blood-thirsty, monstrous thing that is Wayne LaPierre. How's that for demonizing and villainizing, Joe, you hypocritical? I don't want meaningful dialogue with the NRA, because meaningful dialogue with the NRA puts six-year-olds in coffins. Mother Lanza listened to the meaningful dialogue from the NRA, and one day her 20-year-old son picked up a Bushmaster rifle, put a couple of rounds through Mother Lanza's head, and headed for the school from the NRA's meaningful dialogue. And who is Joe Manchin to tell you, me, or God knows the grieving parents of Newtown, Connecticut, and the grieving families of Aurora, Colorado, and the grieving families of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, and the grieving families in Clackamas, Oregon, and the grieving families of Virginia Tech, and the grieving families of Tucson, and the grieving families, and the grieving families, and the grieving families, and the grieving families, whom they should be working with. But you see, this is the same mindset that with which Joe has poisoned the culture of West Virginia as well. That's how come I can spot this sputum from a mile away. I've been in the room. I've looked him in the eye when he said, "Well, we've got to have balance between jobs and the environment." And balance to Joe meant that whatever the coal industry wanted, the coal industry got, and another baby was born, gasping for its first breath because of the poisons that Joe's buddies in the coal industry pump into the air and the water via mountaintop removal. I know Joe. And this is classic obfuscatory Joe. Manchin described himself as a proud member of the NRA, adding, "I'm a defender of the Second Amendment, which I will always be." You will always be the Second Amendment? That journalism, it's harder than it lets on. Manchin watched the slaughter of 26 children and adults at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, unfold on news networks, an unthinkable act of carnage. Yeah, darn it! Dr. John, are you out there? Are you hearing these excuses for journalism? Now, just get your head around this sentence. And I'm pretty sure it's not me, because I am a longtime reader, writer, and speaker of the English language. And you may ask my family, they are sick unto tears of having their grammar, their writing, and their speech corrected. Manchin watched. Okay, write this down and diagram it or something, if there's still anybody in America who remembers how to diagram a sentence. Because I don't. Manchin watched the slaughter of 26 children and adults at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, unfold on news networks, comma, an unthinkable act of carnage he still finds difficult to accept as real. Poor old Mannix Porterfield was trying to fluff up Joe, trying so hard to fluff up Joe that he just let grammar just right out the window. Or meaning, even. Or content. Apparently, news networks are an unthinkable act of carnage he still finds difficult to accept as real. Joe finds a lot of stuff difficult to accept as real. He finds anyone who objects to having mountains blasted into tiny particles the size of a virus and not liking it, he finds those people difficult to accept as real. He finds scientific reports that show the nearer one lives to a mountaintop removal site, the more likely one is to die or get cancer or heart disease. He finds that difficult to accept as real as well. "It's just hard for me to comprehend," the Democratic senator said. "It's hard for me to get my thoughts around any of this type of crime against babies and children. I just can't fathom that." Could you fathom it, Joe, at Columbine? Because those were children, too. Could you fathom it, Joe, in Tucson? Could you fathom it in Aurora? Now, they weren't babies or nothing, but they were still pretty much young people. Could you fathom it at Virginia Tech, Joe? Or are you only finding it difficult to fathom because the NRA has finally been called out. The demon has been named. Manchin says part of the dialogue must be the blood and gore that saturates much of the fare coming out of Hollywood, along with graphic violence that drenches video games popular with children. Really? With children? My son likes some of those games. He can't buy them with his own money. They will not sell them to him without him displaying an ID showing he's an adult. Popular with children? I think you're making up crap, Joe. Now, I just read you that paragraph. I want you to understand the propaganda value. Assuming that very many people who actually read this paper actually read this far in. Marvelline? Yeah, says here, Senator Joe, says here in the third paragraph, he says it's awful to think of banning assault weapons. I guess we can still like him. That's good, sweet pea. Now, here's the context. Manchin says part of the dialogue must be the blood and gore that saturates much of the fare coming out of Hollywood, along with the graphic violence that drenches video games popular with children. Quote, everybody talks about gun control, unquote, the senator said. Well, he wants people to stop talking about gun control. We need to be diverted by talking. Yeah, the mentally ill in this country have been damned well demonized for the past 4 days. That was the first talking point that came out. Anybody who thought that the NRA had gone to ground and wasn't working at the... No, they missed it, because these things don't come out by themselves. The first thing that gets talked about is mental illness is not an organic result of a mass murder using weapons that are similar to those being used in the Syrian Civil War. That doesn't just happen. But the mental illness thing, the Hollywood thing, remember, Joe Scarborough, the first thing he mentioned was Hollywood and not guns. These are not coincidences. But Joe continued, we're talking about a vast array of things, how we as a society have got... Let me see if I can get through that without the little clap on, clap off, Mr. Grammar thing going in my brain. We're talking about a vast array of things, how we as a... This guy talks almost as pretty as Sarah Palin. We're talking about a vast array of things, how we as a society have gotten to this level where we not only tolerate but accept it, but we glorify it in movies and everything else we do. But we've got to be very careful. We've got a First Amendment along with a Second Amendment. From one English speaker to another, what does that mean? At the same time, Manchin said the gratuitous violence in movies and games probably changed all of us. Well, there you have it. I mean, I admit it. My buddy Bo turned me on to a thing called Need for Speed, car driving game. And you can drive like a real maniac in that. And now when I go out on the highway, I drive just like that. Another topic that needs studying, because there's lots of stuff that needs studying here. We got to study it for a long time till the media packs up and leaves Newtown, and we forget that Newtown ever happened. Okay, can we do that? Thank you. Another topic that needs studying is the possible use of armed and trained guards positioned in schools. We have to rethink where we are, he said in the aftermath of the school shooting. I know some schools have officers in them. It can be positive if done in the right way. While Manchin is adamant that he isn't backing Bloomberg's call for a revival of the assault weapons ban that expired 8 years ago under a sunset provision, the senator said he never carries more than 3 rounds when he deer hunts. I don't know how people that basically go hunting with assault rifles with 10, 20, and 30 rounds in their guns. I don't know those people. He doesn't have any data on the effectiveness or lack thereof with the 10-year ban on the so-called assault weapons. Now they're so-called assault weapons, you notice? But the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is described here in this ain't gonna win a Pulitzer anytime soon kind of writing, as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, says its own research on the ban, along with other gun control measures, led to insufficient evidence to ascertain if such laws prevented violence. I'm not going in that direction, Manchin said, when asked if he would support a renewed ban. So all that little happy Snoopy dancing going on among progressives yesterday that, you know, oh, look, an NRA member's going to be rational. Silly progressive. I think everything should be on the table. I'm not afraid to say let's talk about it for fear that someone might interpret that I support or don't support. I'm not afraid of the political ramifications in taking a responsible action. My goodness, have we gotten so toxic in our government that we can't even have a serious dialogue and conversation by responsible people? My stars. If an interesting monster can't have an interesting hairdo, I don't know what this world's coming to. Bobby Pence, please. I was just saying to my girlfriend at the shop the other day, if an interesting monster can't have... Oh, this is never going to hold. You're going to need a pardon and then... So after Weasel... giving a better Weasel performance than the Weasels in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Joe then proceeds to remind us that he ain't afraid of nothing! If I was afraid of something, I wouldn't have shot that there cap and trade bill with my shooting iron gun. And I took dead aim and I took it out. Sweet Jesus. But maybe we can get some security guards, and then we can just keep on selling these godforsaken death engines. And that'll be good for, what is it, Firearms of America? Is that the name of the company? Yeah, it turns out all these companies, most of them aren't traded on the New York Stock Exchange. Most of them are owned by private equity firms, like Cerberus. Really, Cerberus. That still amazes me. Where Dan Quayle has a corner office. Yeah, I know, Dan Quayle. I laugh, too. Cerberus Holdings, who at one point in time owned Chrysler in a desperate attempt to get the government to buy them out, and, you know, just give them a little welfare. They like their welfare money. Cerberus owns the company that makes the Bushmaster. Cerberus owns the company that makes the Bushmaster that has the advertising campaign that says, your man card has been reissued, you know, upon purchase of a Bushmaster. I guess that made Mother Lanza feel really good, knowing that her man card was back up. Right. So, just watch this thing, because it can get perverted in a hurry. And while I refrain from trying to be the guy with some answers, when they're so godforsaken simple right in front of my face that I can't help but see them, I can't help pointing them out. And this will be the second night in a row that I am pointing this out, and I'm doing it because I want it. We're a little family, the Horn. But we do have the power to get some conversations started here and there. Or whisper some ideas into the ears of the universe. And with that in mind, I would like to offer up a couple of things. To wit, that a gun ban and a so-called assault weapons ban is not worth a tinker's damn going forward as just a ban on future sales of these weapons. They have to be banned and criminalized. Let's work through this real carefully. There are millions of these things that are out there already in the stream of commerce. There are millions of potential Mother Lanzas out there. And Dylan Klebolds, Eric Harris's, and Jared Lee Loeffner's. With easy access to these weapons. And we know now that when people's brains go sideways, they like to use these weapons, right? So if we acknowledge these firearms to be the desperate danger to our body politic and our culture that they really, 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 no kidding, are, then to simply say we're not going to sell any more of them is wholly ineffective. Because it means the damn things are still out there in massive profusion. So we know then that we are confronted with a larger problem. That we cannot say that there will be no more or shockingly few, infinitesimally fewer of these incidents done with these weapons if we simply say that you can't sell them anymore. They have to be gotten off the streets. That means the ones that are in those closets, in those safes, in those under those beds, waiting for the next Loeffner, the next Lanza, the next Klebold, have to be rendered useless. So any discussion about these militarized, civilianized military-style weapons has to be a definition broad enough to take all of them in. The future sale of them has to be banned. We have to have a total mandatory buyback program, such as was instituted by Australia, after which they have had no more of these. And I said mandatory buyback. That means you have to come and give it up for fair market value. Okay? And then, and this is a legal term of art, But perhaps some of our legal correspondent types can opine on this. We have to create a situation of what is called strict liability for possession of these firearms. And that means that if you use one of these things and are caught with it, if one of these things is stolen from your home and goes on to be used in some sort of horror nightmare scenario, then it's your ass we're going to come after. And we're going to come find you. Because we, the people of the United States, are trying desperately, desperately to create a more perfect union. And anyone who owns one of these weapons is a direct impediment to that. So, did you have the weapon? Did you not participate in the buyback? Did you think you were just going to keep it under the mattress and nobody was ever going to use it? But somebody used it? Well, congratulations. You just earned yourself a life term in the prison industrial complex. For felony murder. That will go a long way toward a solution to the so-called assault weapons problem. If some guy out there is so insecure about the size of his penis that he absolutely must have a firearm, any expert on firearm exchanges can tell him that it seldom takes more than two rounds, and that most shootings occur at point-blank range. I am not talking about Joe Manchin's precious bolt-action rifle that holds three rounds that he uses for hunting deer and cap-and-trade bills. I am not talking about a .22 rifle. I'm not talking about a six-round capacity 1911 Colt 45 semi-automatic pistol. No, sir. No, ma'am. I'm not talking about a muzzle loader that you use to take elk hunting or moose or pronghorn rhinoceros, or, you know, whatever it is that makes your penis feel bigger. No problem with those whatsoever. But these things have got to go. And that seems fairly rational to me. Now, before we go to the phones, and they are lighted up, before we go to the phones, I would like to go to the mailbag. Because we have been, we have gotten a lot of good commentary about this issue. And it's ever so much better than most anything that I have to say. Let's go back to Friday. One of the first people I heard from about this was our very own Texas Betsy. She said, as an elementary school teacher, I am used to talking to students about fears. Many of my students are afraid of the world ending next week. A few are afraid of homelessness or of a parent being deported And now another school shooting? I don't know all the details of what happened in Connecticut, but the New York Times indicates that the shooter was the son of a teacher at the school. We know now that to be not true. And that his mother was one of those shot, which is true. She was a stockpiler. She was an apocalypticist. She was an end-of-the-worlder. For all we know, a Beck listener. Because you don't get that... See, that's the thing. You don't get that end-of-the-world crap listening to Hartman or Stephanie or Malloy or Rick Smith or me or Shannon Moore or anybody else in the progressive spectrum. You only get that apocalyptic hooey listening to the Becks and the Savages and the right-wing religion industry. But anyway, I'm intruding on what Betsy had to say. She continues, "Good God, how do I explain that to my students? And how do I then introduce them to my adult son who comes home from college on Tuesday?" Bob, this gun culture is the terrorism we're supposed to be worried about. It's not from overseas. It's not perpetrated by Muslims or foreigners. It's run-of-the-mill adult young men who shoot others in great numbers. If it scares me as an adult teacher, what fear must it be sending to my precious students? Who is safe anymore? Do we install metal detectors outside the kindergarten rooms? And when is it okay to start talking about putting the lives of our children ahead of the right of every American to own an automatic weapon? And do I need to add to our emergency plan, and if the gunman shoots your teacher, then listen to the nice policeman and get yourselves out of the building safely? Thank you, Betsy. These are real questions that should not even occur in a country that considers itself even marginally civilized. These are the kinds of questions that if you want to be civilized, you work toward getting away from. These are the kinds of questions that some people in Somalia hope someday to stop having to answer. But we're answering them here in the United States because we are rapidly approaching being Somalia with cable. And every single individual who says, "Well, I got my Second Amendment rights and I'm keeping my guns just in case I have to go down with the government," those people are rooting for us to be Somalia with cable. Because as I said, if you say that, somewhere you've got a little bit of treason in your heart. It is wishful thinking. Heard today from our buddy Scott in Sweden. Scott had been having some PayPal trouble and wanted to let me know that the Beat the Swede challenge was going to be met. But I also asked him what his impression was from over there in civilization of what we're doing over here, keeping back the zombie apocalypse. He said, "I have little to add about the Connecticut school slaughter, not after Breivik. That was how long ago? And they're still horrified. As well they should be, that it happened even once. How many of these have happened in the United States since Anders Breivik?" Answer, a lot. "I have little to add about the Connecticut school slaughter, not after Breivik," Scott says. "He was a right-wing fanatic who evidently accumulated his hatred and weaponry over the years. He proved to us that we harbor ghouls enough of our own. As for this guy in Connecticut, this horror is still being mentioned on the press here, but it's not the big story, although evidently it is wall-to-wall in the U.S. Here we see it as yet another in a long line of American shootings, but there is no schadenfreude or gloating, as we know what a proven record of horrors Europe has. The hope was America. And when I read this for the first time, I almost wept, because I realized the truth of it, and I realized the failure of it. Scott says the hope was America, to where a lot of Europeans went, and most everyone has near or distant relatives, would somehow do better. The hope was America would somehow do better. That it hasn't is really no surprise, as humans are humans, and we may all be accordingly deeply flawed. What does give pause for thought is why Americans think they have to own so many weapons and to be their own cops when you always see huge numbers of cops arriving on scene fairly quickly. The question is America really as dangerous as all that? Does each person really need to be armed to hold the bad guys at bay until the cops appear, or is the fear exaggerated out of proportion? To what degree is the fear stoked by popular culture? And does the popular culture present an accurate view, or is it merely titillation with a serious adverse effect, i.e., a self-fulfilling prophecy? When I read that paragraph, I got to thinking, you remember Truman Capote's book, many of you probably read it, In Cold Blood. It was groundbreaking for what it attempted to do. It attempted to step away from plain reporting and do what would later be called by Tom Wolfe, standing on Capote's shoulders, new journalism. And it horrified and fascinated a country. A nondescript, unassuming, rural family in Kansas, butchered in cold blood by a pair of maniacs. And I think things like that do stay in the national consciousness. And so, yes, I think Scott's right. It does, to a certain extent, become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Scott continues, there are fatal shootings here, talking about Sweden, Europe, about one every 3 weeks nationwide in Sweden. But these are almost entirely suicides or crime gangs settling scores with an occasional robbery gone wrong. There is little general fear that I am aware of that each person needs more protection than what the cops provide, and that the sort of crime one may personally expect to suffer through will be white-collar, a break-in, or if personal violence, such as spousal child abuse, it will most likely not involve weapons. Yet even if it does, these weapons will most likely be something found readily at hand. Remove the gun from at hand, and what is left is generally less fatal, even if dreadful in its own right. Can you imagine the thoughts being offered this cogently, this compassionately, this thoroughly on right-wing radio? Me neither. America, Scott continues, is seen as being gun-obsessed, gun-crazy, and all the cowboy, war, cop shows, etc. feature an awful lot of guns. Awful indeed. Each action movie poster features guns in fetishized phallic form. Just why U.S. culture is apparently overly prone to resort to guns, no one really seems to know,
nor can many here identify with that as a person need. As a personal need, I suspect. We've been exposed to U.S. movies and TV for a couple of generations now, yet that way of thinking about guns is still seen as American and not as our own, thankfully. This weekend, concludes Scott, Swedish TV visited a gun store in the U.S., and what they showed as being for sale included great big things that belong in the back of white Toyota pickup trucks wheeling around in the Middle East challenging anything short of a tank. It just had people asking, whatever happened to shotguns? Why the heavy weaponry? It just makes little sense. Why would anyone ever allow things for sale to the public bigger than needed to down a duck or a moose, and the latter only with a single bolt shot? If you miss the first time, the moose won't be there for a second shot, nor do you deserve one. What's with the banana clips and feeder belts for personal use? To even want such things seems infantile. Bang, Scott! Well, you probably shouldn't say bang. There you go, Scott. Infantile. What did I call them early in the program? Babies. Why haven't many American men not outgrown this desire? Real men mature, don't they? And if you need toys, why not a fancy car or a boat? Even a mistress. Something or someone with real utility. Where's the real world utility in weaponry? It just makes no sense, unless Americans, frustrated in all else that matters, deep down inside, just want to be a hero and can only conceptualize that in terms of fighting engines. And see, I have, because, and that really is, well, it is and it isn't. What a lot of these people want to be fighting is Yankees. With the modern definition of Yankee being gay, allied with gay, atheist, Muslim. You get the drill. Scott Close is saying it all seems to boil down to some sort of arrested development. Yep. And it was arrested in about 1865. This came in from Dr. Allen down in Texas. Greetings, Bob. I've just contributed $50 at your website. I'd like to offer one of your challenges, so if another person will pledge $50, I will kick in another $50. Wow, Dr. Allen is willing to go $2 for every one of yours. That's really amazing. I'm very happy to support your work. Because of my profession, I listen to your podcasts. So I lag one day behind on your program. I find your filibobster great. I don't think it needs to be reformed, unlike the Congress. Particularly, I found your recent President Obama boner conversation about leashes just brilliant. Keep up the great work and season's greetings. Dr. Allen. Dr. Allen encourages you to drop by Friends of Peace. friendsofpeace.org. So there you have it. 2-for-1 match. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address under the tab Contribute. You contribute one, up to $50. You contribute $1, Dr. Allen will match with two. And get, and that'll take care of tonight's fundraising needs. We try to raise about $150 a night. More, content in the mailbag. Michael says, under the subject line, video games and Hollywood, So Manchin and the NRA's solution will be to once again pistol whip the speech part of the First Amendment until it cries uncle, while gently stroking and caressing the purdy part of the Second Amendment, the Second Clause. Have I got that right? Yeah, and you know there ain't no sanity clause. Kate noting, sometimes even diagramming doesn't help. Bob, gerunds, dangling participles, and direct objects are my best friend. I diagram sentences to amuse myself. Often, it is necessary to make the sentence more clear to the reader. I make myself tired while mentally correcting folks' speech. My 50s and 60s education is ever a burden. Clarity is missing here, because I am distracted by your rant, but surely you recognize sarcasm and snark from a grammar snob. From one grammar snob to another. Absolutely, Kate, I do. David in South Carolina noting, from a sort of ongoing thought stream, you politicians, I hope you know that you are ruining school for these kids. Hey, look, that may be part of it. Remember, right-wingers hate the gummit schools, right? By allowing guns to be carried into public schools. You're ginning up needless fear and anxiety when the kids need to be learning English, math, science, history, and other subjects without wondering when a firefight is going to break out between teachers and students, between teachers and administrators, between teachers and parents, or between teachers. How long before a teacher or administrator just gets so angry that they open up on someone when a student when a student steals a gun from a teacher? All of these things are more than valid concerns that sort of militate against the idea of an armed camp educational system. Michael continues under the subject line, phallic avatar, not to beat a dead piece of meat, but did you notice in the Bushmaster man card advertisement that the logo for this metallic phallus replacement is a red snake, another phallic symbol, perhaps engorged with blood? I'm betting it's engorged, not encouraged. Because, yeah, right. I hate autocorrect. And not only do you get your testosterone-enriched man card for purchasing a Bushmaster, owned by Cerberus Holdings, but one would assume it also makes one a master of said Bush, if you get my crude meaning. When I saw that advert image yesterday, I was immediately reminded of the incredibly disturbing scene in Taxi Driver in which Scorsese, not De Niro, describes what a gun can do to a woman's... Yeah. That Bushmaster ad is more than just a laughable example of preying on male insecurity. It is also quite rapey. Absolutely disgusting. The advert's target market is clearly not so-called responsible gun owners, but rather the rapists and homicidal maniac wannabes among us. Indeed. So here we are. We find ourselves at 11 minutes past the hour on this, the 18th day of December 2012, the 21st, a scant 3 days away. When, you know, if it hasn't all come tumbling down, the NRA will explain to us what we may and may not do about this bloodthirsty firearms culture in which we find ourselves. I don't know about you, but I just can't wait. I can't wait for the NRA to tell us that our problem is movies and video games. Nope. I can't wait.
Well, somebody's going to find a gun somehow.
Really? Somebody's going to find a gun with 40 or 50 or 60 or 100 rounds in it? Yeah, you get the idea. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Jim.
You talking to me for sure?
I'm talking to you.
My God, this just is incredible, isn't it?
It's gone way past the unthinkable, Jim.
Yeah, it certainly has. And the thing about it is that very shortly, it will all be smoothed over and just forgotten.
Right, because the parachute media will pack the trucks and move on. Funerals are over. You know, let's go back and refuel and get the, you know, fill the portable fridge up with cold cuts and wait for the next call.
Yep, no more reportage for them to wax eloquent on. You mentioned that firm called Cerberus.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like the three-headed dog that guarded hell?
Yeah, the very same.
Well, that's an interesting name for a company, isn't it?
It certainly is, in light of the fact that they are a predatory and or parasitic hedge fund. Yes, it is. And really, the corner office is occupied by one Dan Quayle.
Oh, our spelling champion.
Yes, potato with an E, Dan Quayle.
Mm-hmm, potato, tomato. Saw the whole thing off.
Amen, sweet Jesus. Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah, Dan's an interesting person. I have a good friend who's a flight attendant for National Airlines who lives in Washington who mentioned some things about Dan Quayle and his preferences.
Really now?
Mm-hmm. I mean, take a look at his wife, you can see why.
Wide stance, huh?
Yeah. He's sort of... I guess you'd call him a switch hitter. Of course, after one look at Marilyn Quayle, I know which side my switch would be on.
The wall socket, and it goes to off.
Yeah.
She's a dark beauty. When it's dark, she's a beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. A thing of beauty is a joyful sunrise.
No, we got to laugh a little bit, don't we, Jim?
Well, we sure do after the last 3 days or 4 days ever since this thing was reported on Friday.
What do I understand from you via email a little bit ago? I was rather hoping you might call in so that I could query. The goobers over on the radio box saying they're guarding America against the queers.
Oh, yeah, they're saying stuff like that, and they think that the government is coming away to take all their assault rifles and you know, penile extensions and stuff like that. Yeah, basically is what it is. I mean, they don't say it in those direct words, but you can, you know, deduce from what they're saying that this gives them some sort of extra veneer of masculinity.
Oh, by the way, you'll be interested in this. Just got a note in from David in your home state of South Carolina. He says, South Carolina is now going to allow and encourage teachers and administrators to take guns to and inside public schools.
Well, that's nice. I mean, there's nothing like a role model in the classroom coming in there looking like Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, now, as you have reminded us from time to time, Jim, you have had your fair share of experience with firearms.
Yeah, Bob, as a matter of fact, when I was first started with the government, I used to write lesson plans for the trainer course.
Let me ask you, within the scope of your expertise, because... these people who cannot bear the thought that the easy access to firearms might be the problem, and do things like saying, well, what we need to do is put some guns in the schools. Their answer, you know, arm the teachers to the teeth, you know, just one more thing for the teachers to have to do, and most teachers don't want to in the first place.
Well, Bob, it is crazy, but I
want to ask you a real-world question.
Proceed.
When your average Lanza with his Bushmaster and God knows how many rounds still in the magazine, points it at you. And I'm not trying to do any triggering here. I don't want this to be, this is not an attempt at reinvigorating trauma.
Understood.
But when that person confronts you with that fully loaded, cocked and locked weapon, or cocked and unlocked for that matter.
I think that's more accurate.
Yeah. How is it that you're supposed to get to your sidearm before he can pull the trigger?
Well, I don't know. I guess you'd have to take some lessons from some of these quick draw McGraw people, because I don't think there is a way, to tell you the truth. Because
I mean, is he going to wait long enough for you to get it out and point it at his head and say, "Well, do you feel lucky? Do you, punk?"
No, by the time a person gets into that shooting configuration, they are going to fire. That's it. And they're going to kill you.
Or, I mean, are we going to have a rules change where now the Lanzas and Loeffners and Klebolds are going to stand still long enough to say, "Draw." And somebody's going to be in the background going,
"Yeah, wah, wah, wah." Yeah, I know. Another spaghetti-type Western, right?
Well, the point I guess I'm getting to, Jim, is that for all the complaint about violent movies, all of the answers that these idiots proffer seem to be based on Hollywood fantasy that never replicates in reality.
Well, I have a problem with that, Bob, and I think that a lot of these Hollywood movies in which there is just so much gratuitous violence, and a lot of these video games, I can't help but believe that they have some type of subliminal effect upon the viewer. Now, there's an element of truth to that, and I'm going to take issue with you here, but I believe that they do.
To the extent that they desensitize, or...
They desensitize, and also wish in certain elements of people whose stability is questionable to emulate. I believe that's a definite fact. I mean, I have seen so many films on TV, and I watch a lot of TV too much because of my, you know, it is my portal on the world. And when I see these things, and the results of the violence is so well placed on the screen, I mean, they're not content to just hear a weapon discharged or whatever. They want to show you what it does by means of tricks and things of that nature.
Well, and you know, I think about the number of times that the ballistic gelatin that those guys on...
Exactly, the History Channel.
Yeah, the Mythbusters use in the show, and you know, you can find it on the Hunting Channel, too. Now, this particular round is designed to tumble when it strikes flesh, doing maximum damage. Notice here what we have in ballistic gel.
Oh, yeah, they have these mounds of ballistic gel up there, and they get up there and show people how to load the weapon, and then the guy cuts loose with a weapon, and you can see the actual effects that it has upon simulated human flesh. Sure. I mean, I hate to say this, but I think that there are a lot of people who get all wet down there watching that kind of stuff.
I think you're absolutely right. And they're the same bunch that thinks they're out on the frontier somewhere.
Exactly.
Garden freedom.
Or I can't wait to see what mine'll do.
From the atheist homosexual Yankees, right?
Or to an animal, or to a homosexual Yankee, or to someone whom I don't like, or someone who I think is, or whom I think is, threatening my right to do whatever I think I have a right to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
But no, I'm not saying that desensitization is not possible. However, I remember that,
very possible.
For instance, you know, Brian Fisher, whose audio I played last night, who said that God is a gentleman and therefore slaughters little children because we don't pray in schools. He's with the American Family Association. And I remember back when the original...
What?
Yes.
Would you please repeat that for me? I'm sorry. I didn't quite get that.
He said that God allowed these children to be slaughtered because he is a gentleman, and we don't pray in school, and he won't protect children because he will not go where he is not wanted.
Well, that's certainly a far cry from the suffering of the little children to come unto me.
Yeah, it is, and it's disgusting. But the larger point...
What that means.
The larger point, Jim, is that he works for an organization called the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. And I remember way, way back, I think it goes as far back as when I was just a little baby DJ spinning Happy Goodman Family records over in Tuscumbia. I remember Donald Wildman getting himself up in an absolute Maiden Forms in a Twist furor over Warner Brothers cartoons. You know, where anvils get dropped on heads.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that this was contributing to our violent, godless culture.
You mean like Wile E. Coyote and things like that?
Yeah. You know, pronoun trouble. You know, you don't have to shoot him now, you can take him home and shoot him later, and all of that.
I haven't seen too much of Brian Fisher or people like that. I've tried to...
No, you've heard him on this program. That's probably about as much as you'll ever want to hear.
Yeah.
One good day... Listen, it's so bad, Jim, one day of Brian Fisher would make you pray for the return of sane broadcasting like that of the goober in Beckley. The sane broadcasting of.
Oh, my God, he must be terrible. I normally, tell you the truth, Bob, when you put that guy on, that's when I go to the refrigerator and get some more ice cubes and hit for a bottle of scotch.
I understand. And you don't have the little one shot at a time pourer in the top of the bottle either, do you?
No.
No, you like that happy gurgling sound. We all do. Bloop, 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 bloop.
Well,
hello, 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 hello.
Alcohol sometimes, in particular this day and time, can do more than milk and can to justify the ways of God to man.
Hear, hear. But no, that's been going, my point is that's been going on for a long time, this claim that Hollywood is somehow responsible.
I've never really, you know, I basically, when I've seen Wile E. Coyote and stuff like that, even when an anvil is dropped on the coyote's head, he gets up and moves on and tries to get the beep, beep.
Yeah, right. And see, my point is, even with the most violent of video games, even if it has some sort of deleterious effect on the human mind, the human's mind who has been deleteriously affected must then obtain a working firearm in order to take it to the next step. So even if we assume, for the sake of argument, that Joe Manchin and these others are correct, and it's all Hollywood's fault and all the video gamers' fault, the broken-brained kid still can't do anything unless he can get hold of Mama's Bushmaster.
Well, apparently that happened in Connecticut, that's for sure. And I'm not exactly sure what her role in this was. I think she... Basically, and I know people know what I'm going to say because I've seen it on the TV for the last several days, that she would take him regularly to target shooting ranges and things of that nature. And apparently exhort his ability to be a good marksman and taught him how to handle a weapon, right?
Apparently so, but she's also an apocalypticist.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And she was stockpiling weapons, and she bragged down at the corner tavern about her weapons. She wouldn't allow people into her home. If you knocked on the front door, she'd come out and say hello to you from the side door.
Well, vice like virtue has its own reward, and that was her reward. But unfortunately, it didn't stop there. I mean, her son gathered three weapons and stuffed his the pockets of his cargo trousers with extra rounds and took off to a school. And I'm not exactly sure what her association with that school was. I think she may have volunteered or something.
At some point, maybe. But she'd been on the outs with the local school board. That's why she pulled Adam out of the school system and homeschooled him.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's some. Maybe there was a deep hatred there between his mother, this boy, and his mother, and it was some form of transference. I don't know. I don't know the psychological term.
And we never will.
No, no. But I mean, the fact that these people are having assault weapons, and the home is no place to have something like that.
By the way, Jim, courtesy of our buddy Ray, we now have a new term for that bottle of scotch. That is logic lubrication.
Oh yeah, I've called it lots of things, but I'll have to put that one in my vocabulary.
But Ray also points out that where Mother Lanza is concerned, you know, she was so afraid that the world was about to end, and she created a self-fulfilling prophecy, at least for herself.
Yes, she did. And how in the world could a few weapons like that defend her against the apocalypse in which she so...
In a tiny little area of Connecticut.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if the poles are going to reverse, and if we're going to have all these meteors coming down from outer space, I mean, what in the world?
I don't think you can lead a meteor with a Bushmaster enough to take it out.
I don't think you can either, and you know that just doesn't compute with me.
But let's take a moment with that real quick, Jim. Darlene called into the program last night. She's from Connecticut, and she was telling us a little bit about Newtown.
I heard her.
And it's a nice place.
Very nice place.
And it's got McMansions.
Okay.
And I guess it's a place maybe that you live if you,
have arrived.
Yes. And her house is no shack.
No, it looks like a mansion from the aerial shots that I've seen. And she gets $50,000 a month from a divorce settlement?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, if you're stockpiling weapons to hold off invaders, where are those invaders going to come from, and who are they going to be?
Maybe from co-op.
No. Sadly, no. What I'm hinting at here is that there is a subtext in almost all of these protecting my household types of racism, rank and subvert.
Okay.
Because, you know, the zombies are going to come from New York City because, you know, they're going to know that the good people are up there with all the, you know, all the food and the goodies and electricity and running water and stuff.
And 60 miles away from New York City, yeah, I can understand.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but in her mind, how in the world would they be able to travel from New York City under conditions that are totally, apocalyptic? Because wouldn't all those people in New York City either be vaporized, gone, whatever?
Oh no, they're going to be in hordes. So even you know if a horde of 500,000 start out. Well, even if it gets pared down some on the way, that's still 100,000 coming for you there, and you better be ready at the right slit with your Bushmaster. And no little pissant six shooter's going to get the job done, because we're talking here, Jim, about a horde. That is the degree of mental illness and paranoid delusion that attends these people. I mean, And let me just put in a word here, because I know you know these folks too. I know the real live, honest to goodness, responsible gun owners.
Oh yeah.
And they don't have stockpiles of 50 weapons and 10,000 rounds of ammunition in their home. I mean, I know people, well, it's like Bill was describing in from Cleveland last night, whose work takes them into places at odd hours in which some degree of self-preservation may be necessary. I understand that mindset completely, Jim.
Oh, I do too.
But I don't think, but I have yet to meet one of those people who say that, because first of all, they are hyper competent with their firearms. Hyper competent. And I've never met one yet that thought anything that ever required him or her to discharge the weapon would require more than the second round being discharged. And so even a 5-round cylinder on a 357 mag would be rounds 3 through 5 would be superfluous.
Well, you're talking about absolute overkill here.
I was trying to avoid that word. Yes.
Well, that's exactly what it is overkill, and you know that's exactly what people like this boy's mother, I guess that's the doctrine in which she had been enslaved. And I think that's a good word for it, because these people are absolutely enslaved by their weapons. They don't own their weapons. Their weapons own them.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've had a lot of experiences with a lot of different types of weapons, whether they're firearms from the shoulder or from the hip, or we're talking about minefield, things of that nature. I used to teach that stuff at Fort Jackson. Claymores.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
any tank weapons, all that type of stuff. I used to write lesson plans for the train-to-trainer. And the thing, when you deal with weapons...
That kind of meant you had to know how to use it, didn't it?
Well, yeah, you had to know how to use it, and you know how to deploy it properly. And you could see exactly what it would do. I mean, these aren't video games. I mean, we're talking for real here. I mean, these are weapons that are, you know, used by the U.S. military in combat situations in which you are fired upon, or before being fired upon, you may have to take preemptive actions to save your life. But we're not talking about schools.
No, we certainly aren't. Schools. Meanwhile, on the other bizarre end of the spectrum, and you're going to love this, Jim.
Schools are not minefields, nor are they battlefields. They are centers of learning.
Save for the fact that they have been rendered them by the likes of the National Rifle Association.
But you were saying...
I was going to say, just to give you a taste of the opposite end of the spectrum, and you know, just how twisted the right-wing mind can get. Now, you know, most of the... there are liberal gun owners, progressive gun owners, but most of them are right-wing, and most of them entertain at some point in time one of those little fantasies where they have to shoot it out with the blue helmets from the UN, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But David in South Carolina just shared this little nugget with me, and I thought you would find it interesting. Out in California, white-wing parents are suing school districts to have yoga classes removed from schools because yoga is a religious practice and should be banned because religion should not be a part of public schools.
Oh, you got to be kidding.
I don't have a linky here from David, but I...
No, you're not. No,
but
you're
but
not.
I'm not. I have no reason to doubt David whatsoever.
Yoga?
Yoga.
Oh, my God, that's supposed to be a life-enhancing and life-preserving type of activity that's designed to affect well-being and calm. Is that what they hate?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess they may as well remove all the school nurses and teachers and doctors and stuff like that from them too,
and replace them with armed vigilantes, which is what one of the remedies being proffered is. Ron in Raleigh just wrote in and said, "You're going to have to help me here, Ron. I don't know what R-H-O-W-A is, but he says, have you perused a copy of Home Protection magazine? And there are all kinds of these magazines out there, Jim." Guns and Ammo, American Hunter, Shooter's Digest, and now Home Protection magazine. Ron says, this is a mag directed at women like Mother Lanza. The cover photo is usually a mini-skirted hottie caressing her piece with a fearful yet determined look on her face. Bob, says Ron, I've never met a gun nut that didn't want to bust a cap in somebody.
I've heard that too. How many times have I heard that? And these were not just restricted to men in uniform. These are civilians who apparently would get some type of thrill out of that. I mean, what do they want people to do? Instead of where you do your spring planting and stuff like that, put minefields out in your front yard? Or instead of a picket fence, barbed wire? Or some type of electrical device with 20,000 volts through it? In which people's homes not only become their homes, but also some type of armed fortress. I mean, Bob, what kind of a quality of life is that if you have to live behind that type of protection?
Well, the short answer is it is no quality of life, Jim.
And when you think that way every day, and when you get up in the morning, you don't think about, well, you know, what can I do today, or this, that, and the other, or fixing breakfast, or doing what normal people do. You have people getting up and thinking, well, let's see, how else can I add to my defense perimeter? And to me, that's no quality of life whatsoever. It's the cult of...
Oh, yeah, you know, you mean in the two-story Cape Cod where Mommy and Daddy and the teenagers get up every morning and the first one out of the bedroom says, go, 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 go! And the second one comes out of the bedroom and goes 15 feet and the third... And go, go, go! And the third one comes and somebody winds up finally brushing their freaking teeth. And they're all standing there with their Bushmasters at the ready.
Well, you know, that, I guess you're right there. And, I mean, we're not talking about a home. We're talking about some type of Paris Island or some type of training base in which, you know, we are preparing, instead of a family for its normal day, for people to get up and see, how quickly they can get to a certain defense position?
Jim, I have lived a situation, and I will not go into details, but I have lived a situation where when we returned home after dark, before I would, my lovely wife would sit in the automobile with a loaded firearm while I took another loaded firearm
and cleared the way.
And cleared the house to make sure that some loony who wanted to do us harm wasn't in there. I did it day after day, week after week, month after month. The day that Agnes and I were married, a man watched us with the crosshairs on us through a scope sitting on top of a .30-06.
Well, I'm not going to ask you why, because that's personal, but that must be a very horrible experience.
It was hell.
May I ask what made it go away?
Time and legal action.
Wow. Well, I can understand that.
And it is a hell of a way to live a life.
But not in my home situation.
But, I mean, I can remember it as plain as day. Pulling up the car, putting it in park, pulling out the firearm, pulling the slide, taking the safety off, going to the door, going literally room to room.
And not knowing whether or not he was there already prepared and could get the first drop.
Right, and understanding that I was probably, if he was, I was dead. But that at least it would afford a chance to my family.
To survive, yeah. Well, I'm very sorry you had to go through that. And
so, I mean, when I talk about the, I want people to understand, when I talk about firearms, this is not academic for me.
I understand.
One of the most blistered into my brain's images is that of my 16-year-old brother with his head turned over on one pillow with his brains coming out, going into the emergency room at a hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. All I have to do is call it up and I can see it. Down to the last grain of the photographic detail.
That's just a hell of a way to have to live. But that's the way a lot of these people are promoting.
It's what, and that's the sick part. It's not just what they promote. They want it, Jim.
Yeah, it's not born of necessity. It's born of volition. Is that not a fair assessment?
Yeah, it is born of volition. I think in some cases, these gun goobs, it goes past volition into active yearning. Fantasy that approaches the kind of stuff that normal people masturbate over other things over.
Well, and then the next stage is actualization.
Yes, it is.
That's it. Well, look, I have a very healthy respect for all these weapons and stuff like that, and I can see no reason why people should have assault rifles and things of that nature and these multi-shot weapons and other types of things. Because God only knows when they graduate from that stage, they're going to find other types of devices that are equally as arcane. I mean, I wasn't kidding about minefields and stuff of that nature. Because they're actually people who are contemplating that.
Sure.
They want.
And the right wing, Jim, went absolutely crazy after this shooting, trying to point to a situation in China where a man attacked children with a knife and wounded 20. But the operative phrase is wounded. They will live to heal.
Mm-hmm.
The fantasy of the right wing is to, well, it just means more people get hurt with knives. You know what?
It's more than that, Bob. I mean, what's that person going to grow up like as a child who has survived a life threat situation like that?
That child is going to be probably needing a lifetime's worth of counseling. Survivor's guilt is hell.
It is, and oftentimes it does not work. I mean, there's no amount of counseling and stuff like that can erase from my mind, which is a tabula rasa, that type of experience. And to me, it's just horrible. And like I say, I grew up with firearms. We had it in my home. We had, oh, God, I don't know how many. And for Christmas, I was given a lot of pistols, rifles. I remember the best one I ever got was a Winchester Model 70 with an 8-power Lyman scope. But, you know, I never envisioned using that to kill something. The only thing I ever killed was a target. Because I've always envisioned life as being too precious to remove without reason, and to destroy a beautiful living creature. I mean, that's how I've come to over the years, because I've seen too much horror.
Indeed.
That comes from the other end of that weapon, which people intake so much glorification. Listen, you've got other callers. I've expressed what I needed to say, and I hope you have a good night, and don't get too shaken up by any icebergs that happen to hit the Titanic.
Wonder if there's any seashell fossils in the icebergs, Jim.
Now, I can tell you where the seashell fossils are. That fool's head.
You have a good night, Jim.
Yeah, buddy.
Cheers.
Out here.
Bye. Our good buddy, Jim. Never fails to bring something to the table. News Ninja Gene with a comment that I think is worth at least pondering. And then I'm going back to the phones. Got a Skype call on here. If Mr. Lanza had offed one bankster, I'll bet the United States would have Japan-style gun control so fast those cold dead fingers of the gun people would have the same gripping power of a 3-year-old with a candy bar. True. I think it is brutally true. But then again, maybe not. this country tolerated the assassin. Remember, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated with a handgun. This country tolerated the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, of Garfield, of McKinley, attempts on the life of various politicians through the 20th century, the killing of Kennedy, and still, Bupkis. Let's go to Skype where Sandra's been waiting. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, can you hear me?
I gotcha.
Yeah, I guess I just called because I'm, you know, I don't know if I can't say I'm surprised, but it's just kind of, you know, awesome what the White House is proposing. So anyway, listen, so a CBS poll said 69% of Americans and 51% of Republicans support tax hikes on those over 250,000. Now, 250 people make 250,000 is about 0.5%, which is about 16 million households. Now, the Obama, okay, and the Obama administration has now, you know, has now gone back to their dynamic, you know, where they start conceding. So that now Washington is debating between 400,000 and a million. We're now getting into under 5 million households to get this revenue from. It is absurd. And it's disgusting because Obama wants to cut Social Security now, which does not contribute to the deficit.
Yeah, that changed
CPI. And give rich people a tax cut. This
yeah, that changed CPI business. Where you won't know your necessarily, they won't call it a Social Security cut, but it is one because of the changed CPI, Consumer Price Index.
Well, everyone's calling it a cut, though. I mean, at least that's one thing. I mean, I've looked in the Hill, Washington Post, all the papers are saying, yes, change CPI, but they say it translates to a cut. The word is there. So Obama thinks that it's okay that he's doing this. So this is what I was laughing at. Meanwhile, the White House has problems within their coalition, too. Their allies are disappointed to see the old dynamic reasserting itself. The president makes concessions, thinking he's close to a deal, and then the Republicans pocket those concessions, offering nothing but renewed threats to blow up the talks in return. One more thing. Worse, the pushback from congressional Democrats over change CPI is stronger than the administration expected. What the fuck? Do they not think that people would push back? Let me repeat.
Well,
Obama wants to cut Social Security.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it?
Well, I didn't vote for him, okay? I voted for Stein here in California, so I didn't vote for that son of a bitch because I knew exactly what was coming up. And sorry if I'm offending some Obama supporters out here, but you know what? This is some bullshit. This is not what you voted for, I'm sure.
No, it is not.
And I think that, you know, I'm sick of the sort of liberals already hedging on this shit. I can see him in my Twitter feed, the comments, or, you know, as if there's some room here to make my mother get less money. That's what this is about.
Yeah, less money that ain't much money in the first place. Let's keep it in perspective.
Right. So, and the older you get, the less you get. I mean, it's sadistic, man. It's sadism. Because Obama is saying, well, I'm going to let the rich pay, I'm going to make permanent the taxes below $400,000, which is essentially keeping the Bush tax cuts, because like I said earlier, we're talking 16 million households out of 320 million people. So he's keeping those debilitating, deficit-blowing up tax cuts. But he's turning around and saying somehow we're going to have to offset that by fucking over old people.
And that is so Washington. It is sickening. It's divorced. It's absolutely divorced, Sandra, from anything that smacks of reality outside the most central district of Washington D.C.
And I'll add one more little wrinkle to it. Is this shit is coming out while people are grieving. Yeah, I said it.
And that's the ultimate, that and not yours, but that is the ultimate political cynicism.
I don't know.
No, not that you're being cynical, but that this is politically cynical.
Well, because, you know, I can't help but jump, you know, make that jump in my mind because it is such an odious thing. This is like one of the worst things you can do to augment Social Security because it slowly strangles the program. So that's why I'm a bit upset. I'm like, wow.
Not to channel my inner Friedman or anything, but I had occasion today to stop by the Social Security office. I went to re-up my driver's license and couldn't find my Social Security card. Now, I had my birth certificate. I had my passport. I had 9 dozen things with my address on it. I had my voter's registration card. But they wouldn't touch me without a Social Security card, so I had to drop by the Social Security office. And I walked in there, and if you ever want to see why Social Security is an absolute necessity, spend an hour in your local Social Security office. And you'll get an idea of who it is that's taking it on the chin anytime we talk about touching Social Security. Because you know what, Sandra, there weren't any silk stockings in there.
Well, exactly. And, I mean, it's so despicable, see, because we're talking about a constituency that, you know, they're not, it's not all powerful. And the only thing that makes that program powerful is because it's universal. And, you know, they're trying to F with it when it's
to make it a welfare program.
When it's not contributing to this particular crisis, you know, and that's why I have to view Obama and his White House really with a lot of suspicion because this isn't necessary. And I love that line about, oh, we're falling back into the old dynamics and the Democrats are disappointed. Don't be disappointed. Just say no.
Yeah, be furious.
You know, don't be disappointed. Just not vote for it.
Yeah, in a moment of cynicism, Ron in Raleigh writes in and says, tell Sandra, she forgets that these folks are the job creators. The changed CPI will, of course, cause a $6,000 loss to the average SSI recipient over 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, no, this is like a real amount of money to people who don't get a whole bunch from it anyway, and all the other avenues for retirement income is being annihilated. And we still are allowing a system where the people like Tim Geithner, they think that allowing felons to stay in charge of huge financial institutions promotes stability. Think about that, Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absurd.
And it would be nice if we could get some sort of, you know, never mind straight talk out of Washington. If we could just get some sort of straight reporting out of the media, it would help considerably. Marty just sent a story in. In a statement, the White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said the president has put a balanced, reasonable proposal on the table that achieves significant deficit reduction or reflects the real yada, yada, yada. The president is willing to continue to work with Republicans, blah, blah, blah. Helps the economy, puts our nation, yada, yada. Then this, the Speaker's Plan B approach doesn't meet this test because it can't pass the Senate and therefore will not protect middle-class families and does little to address our fiscal challenges with zero yada yada. And it refers to Harry Reid's statement that Speaker Boehner's Plan B is the farthest thing from a balanced approach. So, you know, are they or aren't they? I honest to God don't know. But I do know that if we don't voice our absolute disgust with this idea of, there's that phrase again, zombie-eyed granny starving, they'll do it in the dark and still of the night.
Well, no, and I don't want to hear, and I'm really pissed off at these, you know, so-called lefties who are talking as if, well, we have to agree to something. You know, this whole meme where, well, you do this because you got to do something. No, we don't.
No.
This is Obama's legacy. At the expense of the most vulnerable. We don't have to do anything. What we need to do is be united in opposing any attack on what's left of the safety net. Because, you know, they're idiots up there. They want to drain the economy of whatever aggregate demand may be, which is a vast amount coming from the social insurance program.
You want to hear something truly disgusting? You know, I was talking about Joe Manchin earlier at the beginning of the program, Sandra. He's been worrying about this fiscal cliff to the point that he brought Simpson and Bowles to Charleston, West Virginia, to talk straight with the people of West Virginia, who, you know, mind you, this is one of the most deeply Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, SSI-dependent states in the union. Well, you said that all this was being done while people are grieving and it makes you sick. Well, I can make you sicker, because Joe Manchin actually tied the two together. He said, let me find it here real quick. Manchin suggested that any meaningful measures that might be inspired by the school massacre, many will need funding, and that it could be in jeopardy if the nation's financial house isn't in order. No matter what you're concerned about, child issues, education, defense of our country, if you can't pay for it, you can't do it. If we're talking about truly giving hope to the mentally ill, it has to be paid for, and you can't do it unless you get your finances in order. I'm afraid we're going to come down and put some kind of last-minute patch, thinking it will get us beyond, and it's not going to do a thing. This man actually tied some sort of remedy, whatever that remedy may be, for what happened in Newtown, Connecticut, to giving in to the rich with this fiscal cliff baloney. That's reprehensible, Sandra.
Oh, no, it's hideous. But the thing is that, you know, I keep thinking, you know, am I in an alternate, you know, universe here? Because I cannot get past the trillions that was added to some ledger for the banks and the financial industry. So every time I hear them talking about we're in deep trouble, I'm like, no, we're not. You just generated $7 trillion for the financial industry over the last 4 years. So if you're having trouble trying to convince people of this song and dance, maybe that's why. Because a lot of people still remember that the banks were bailed out. And that's
right. It's kind of what News Ninja Gene said about, you know, if it had been a bankster, if Sandy Hook Elementary had happened inside the four walls of J.P. Morgan Chase, we'd have meaningful gun control yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? If the murderer wasn't some white guy and some Muslim sounding, it'd be a different story too. God knows.
Oh,
it might be roundup time like the 40s up in here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And of course, I've heard the right wings hollering. What about still nothing about Major Hassan? Well, you know, there is something to be said about Major Hassan. That man went onto an army base with guns all over the place and still did what he did.
You know, yeah. Well, so much for their give a teacher a gun.
Jesus.
But you know what I find really interesting, which I'm quite glad to see, and it's like, oh, shock horror, the teachers' retirement fund in California is like, oh, wait one damn minute, we need to get all our money out of these gun corporations. Oh, I wonder why. You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
you know, we start getting into the land of the absurd, you know?
Who was the genius that thought it would be a good thing to be invested in Cerberus in the first place?
Well, exactly. I mean, and, you know, I mean, isn't that the freaks that guarded the gates of hell anyway? That name?
Yep. The multi-headed dog.
Right. So it's all just sick.
Again,
you know?
as I noted to Jim, with Dan Quayle in a corner office.
Yeah, no, Dan Quayle. You know, much like Bill Kibbins is making the connection between maybe you don't want to fund or get, you know, invest in these oil companies, you know, on a smaller scale. You can say the same thing about these armament companies, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's always the market solution. And, you know, we always go for that because we don't have any other option because the political system is so corrupted now. I'm sorry to keep going back to that bank deal, but they laundered drug money and broke sanctions dealing with terrorist groups, Bob.
Yes.
And we're not prosecuting because it may cause instability. No. You can send officers of that company to jail. I'm sure the sun will come up tomorrow.
Yeah, and you know what? There's somebody out there. There's some eager young MBA holder from Harvard who's ready to step into the shoes of the guy doing the perp walk.
Well, the thing is that, like I said, you know, trust me, I'm sure I'm not nowhere near Geithner's pay grade, as you know. But him thinking that that signals stability is so warped. It's complete corruption.
Well, it's stability insofar as it means that you...
Controlled fraud. That's what it means.
Well, and it also means that you stay on the Christmas card list and keep going to the right right social functions.
Well, no, I think that it just, you know, I mean, once again, you know, we're like veering into Roman times type of behavior, you know? I always go back to when the Romans allowed private corporations to collect taxes. That was kind of the end of them. You know what I mean?
That was, I think it was Cicero who said, no one is hated more on the planet than we are who suck the life out of our provinces. But the one I was thinking about the other day, because this just happens to be the history I've been reading, you know, at the Battle of the Milvian Bridge, that's where Constantine beat the Emperor Maxentius to become Constantine the Great. And Maxentius had actually had the support of the Roman people until he started having money problems and had to lean real hard on the Roman people, saying that the country was broke, and then turned around and started building statues to himself.
Well, that's always a telltale sign.
Yeah, I mean, isn't there a little bit of that going on here?
We're
badly broke, but we got $7 trillion laying around.
Right. And, you know, and it's just, but the thing is, because this is sort of an inverted totalitarianism, like managed democracy in the U.S., it's kind of on display for those of us stupid enough to pay attention.
Exactly.
And that's the thing, and that's where I'm at. I'm like, you know, this ain't no left-right thing. This is complete corruption, just to the bone.
It is, and it begs, you know, well, it's like that little hoorah moment that we got when we found out Elizabeth Warren was going to be on the banking committee. But it's going to take a lot more than Elizabeth Warren operating by herself. And as long as you've got goobers like Joe Manchin wandering around out here, I've heard this. I've heard this speech. You know, this guy's a coal broker, okay? He's played entirely artificial, welfare bloated coal industry all his life and thinks that makes him a business genius. Well, he's not. But he'd no sooner take on the real causes of the financial problems in this country than he would take on the NRA, as we've seen this evening.
Yeah, that's why I was laughing. Because for some reason, I was watching on Monday the well-coiffed Joe Scarborough, you know, doing his mea culpa about guns. Did you see that, Matt?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was like, I think that was the first time I watched it for more than, like, 2 minutes. And, his wife or whoever that chick is next to him.
Oh, Mika.
I mean, I know who she is, but yeah. That dynamic is hilarious.
Oh, it is. It absolutely. but you know, no, I've got about enough of Joe Scarborough talking about how he just kissed his little boy on the head.
Oh God, yeah, all that was just I was gagging up and thinking, oh come on. But anyway, so I saw your senator on there, and it was. I was like, this dude is running a good game. And so you're telling me tonight he's completely backed away from it?
Yeah, I mean, he just says he didn't say what he said. He didn't say what people think he said. He said what he said. And what he said is that we've got to go after you, is that we've absolutely got to include the NRA in any discussions here. Yeah, it's just sad, simple flackery for the NRA. And it's disgusting.
Okay, well, anyway, I didn't really, that was all I wanted to talk about because I just think that the only silver lining is that once again, the elite are sort of taken aback by the sort of, how furious people seem to be about this. I mean, Obama, I just think, well, I don't know what he expected, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I go back every time I sit down to think about this whole miserable situation, this some of it being dummied up and made up and frauded up and faked up and ginned up, I just go back to thinking about Alan Grayson sitting on that boat telling us that, when he asked Barack Obama what his, if he could do anything, that beauty pageant question. If you could do anything for America, what would you do? And without missing a beat, President Obama said entitlement reform.
Right. So that's what I mean. This is his legacy. So I just think
And this is all very much, without being too trite and cute, this is only Nixon can go to China. The Republicans could never dismantle Social Security. The Republicans could never destroy Medicare.
Yeah, but I think I can only hope that he, like the Republicans, has overstepped a bit.
I sure as hell hope so.
But I don't
trust anybody inside the Beltway to understand. I read Charlie Pierce every day. And, when he pointed out that this is the worst kind of deal, a deal for the sake of saying, look, we made a deal.
Yeah, it's gross.
And then asking the question, who unplugged the third rail?
Yeah. Well, another thing I noticed was that, Boehner's Republicans are bat crazy because he coughed up this plan B, which is, of course, is a non-starter. And people are like wondering, well, what the hell? So I think that the Republicans are so far gone that they may not even accept this deal. I mean, I may have to start calling the Republicans and talk to them.
I've had that in the back of my mind.
Just tell them, oh, you're going to let them raise taxes on us? Uh-uh. You know what I'm saying? Go that route.
Yeah.
I mean, because whatever way it has to get done, because this is just going to damage the Democratic Party so much. Oh, my God. And, of course, I'm making connections with, maybe the Democrats are just throwing everybody over the bus because they see the writing on the wall with the complete implosion of labor, hence Michigan and they don't have to pander to anybody. So, I mean, who knows what's going on? But if they do this, they're gonna suffer in 2014. It's not going to be good.
No, if they did the right thing, they could see, they are in a place where they can look off in the distance and see a Democratic majority returning to the House. But behavior like this doesn't make that happen. It makes it less likely, not more.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, this is just, I'm just sort of blowing off steam because I'm so gobsmacked by, because it just seems like just a really dumb move for Democrats or progressives or anybody to embrace this because we're not broke and we don't have
to. We ain't Greece.
We don't have to have shared sacrifice where the rich buys one less, Gucci bag or yacht. You know what I'm saying? I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, right. They're not going on beans.
No. And so it's just, it's so ridiculous. And the other thing that's even funnier is that that whole song and dance about him thinking that the Republicans aren't going to use the debt ceiling. That's a joke.
No, they are not going to any time in the near future stop being who or what they are.
Mm.
And frankly, the Plan B thing, does anybody think, is there anybody out there that really does think Boehner has control of his caucus? Because I don't.
No, because otherwise he would have accept, Obama's horrible deal, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway...
He'd leap at it because it's part of his fondest dreams.
Right. I mean, Obama is willing to hand them the seeds of the destruction of Social Security, and they're still balking. You see? So, yeah, maybe folks should call up whatever Republican Congress critter they know and run that game on or something, because Congress is the only place where we can possibly stop this. Congress and the Senate.
Yep.
But, so I see that they're going to snatch Cutie Pie from the jet and put the Jets and put somebody else in next week.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, after last night. Come on.
I know. It's not Tim Tebow. It's whoever the backup is.
Yeah. And Tim is still praying for an answer as to why it's not him.
I know. But that situation is, they're a joke. Oh, my God.
But, you know, my heavens. Gracious sakes. Just to watch, I mean, I saw some of the game, but just to watch the highlight reel.
Yeah, no, that's all I saw.
Which was really a low light reel. Oh, my God.
The only game that was making me laugh, because I hate this team almost as much as I hate the other team, was looking at the Giants. I mean, the 49ers beat the Pats. That was great.
Oh, there was that, and there was what happened to the Giants. I mean, those just. But the what happened to the Pats was just a beat down.
That was great, though.
I mean, it wasn't a stomping, and it was close at the end, but.
No, I know old Cutie Pie tried to come back, but it didn't work.
No, and that Niners defense was just brutal.
Like I said, I'm not a 49ers fan, but I, you know, anytime I just absolutely hate the Patriots, so that was all good. I'll let you go. I'm sure you got others, but have a good evening.
All right, you too, Sandra. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling via Skype from California. And a quick trip to the mailbag before going back to the phones, and we've got the phones lit up, so if you're there, stay there. I want to go back to something that Kim just wrote in. She said, as I listen to you echoing through our house, I don't mean to echo. I think there's a knob for that if I could just find it here. I have one thing I keep thinking. I hear the talk about loonies and guns. I hear you bang on the people who store the guns in fear of the end of the world. I get, Bob, I really get seeing what a gun can do to a human being. I had to identify my beautiful daughter after the back of her head was blown off by a handgun. I get it. But as I watched the beautiful sunset tonight in the Gulf and in my soul said goodbye to the children I did not know and said all the healing I could send through the airwaves to the families, I'm hearing nothing. Nothing on protecting our children from an attack like this again. The Horn family should be brainstorming what we can do. Can do. And, of course, that's what I was talking about trying to get, trying to create a situation where, if we say we're not going to sell any more of these forever, amen, then there's still millions of them out there. It's okay to look at how other countries solved their problem. And our buddy Cossack wrote in a little bit ago, and he said, with regard to the sad spectacle we're living through, I hate to say it, but your solution would not work. Remember Waco? How many more do you want? Precisely zero. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in the stars, it is in us. Ours is a mentally ill society that does not teach people to respect each other as human. I personally am quite well armed and trained. However, I've never shot another being. Mainly, I make holes in targets. Also, since so many of these mass shooters end up committing suicide, why don't they just cut out the middleman, or persons, and go ahead and blow their own brains out and save us all the misery we've recently gone through? Well, I have to disagree, because, again, I haven't said anything about taking all of anyone's guns away. But there are certain firearms that are of choice and that we have empirical data to prove are a huge part of the problem. And those self-same firearms were a huge part of the problem in Australia, which has every bit as much of a macho culture as the U.S. does, minus the some of the lunacy. We can get these weapons off the streets, and we can therefore... Listen, I am down for making it 1% less likely than another Aurora, another Clackamas, another Columbine, another Tucson, another Newtown happens. I'm okay with 1% reduction. And a system whereby we ban the sale of these monster weapons, ban the sale of high capacity clips, drums, etc., and then call in all of them and buy them back at fair market value, and then make the possession of them a strict liability offense. And there are strict liability firearm offenses already out there on the books that are not challengeable under the Second Amendment. Then we will have taken a great step in a solution to this problem. Kim continued and said, I think I would like to sit down with a group of young children and ask them what they think should be done to keep them safe. What would they come up with? What would they find comfortable to them? I don't know, Bob, says Kim. This is not a right-wing, left-wing thing. This is a killing ground we're in right now. Sadly, though, Kim, it is a right-wing, left-wing thing. Because one side, and you heard it this evening, is out there providing cover for the people who in turn provide cover for the people who manufacture the weapons that slaughter our children. And the organization that does that is not in any wise anything that you would ever refer to as liberal or progressive, or to my mind, even sane. It is a left-wing, right-wing thing. If it's not a left-wing, right-wing thing, then why is the right-wingiest of the right-wingers out there, Louis Gohmert, hollering about making underpaid teachers suddenly be armed staff mercenaries as well? Why are the right-wing preachers hollering that children are dead because adults wouldn't let Jesus into the classroom? That's not being said by progressives or liberals. It is a right-wing, left-wing thing we are in, and it is a killing ground. Bill writes in, Blue Ribbon Commission, he asks. Joe Manchin and Joe Lieberman each want a Blue Ribbon Commission. I guess they mean a Blue Ribbon Commission like the Simpson Cat Food Bowls Commission, or the 9/11 No One Could Have Anticipated Commission, or even the Warren Magic Bullet Commission. In other words, another sweep it under the rug, let's talk in circles till everyone is bored to death commission. Newsflash to Joe and Joe. No effing way. I'll tell you what commission I would support with every fiber in my body. A 12-member panel comprised of victims and family members of the Sandy Hook shooting, the Aurora, Colorado movie theater shooting, and the Columbine High School shooting. 4 people from each shooting. Oh, and the co-chairs of the commission, James Brady and Gabby Giffords. The only way Joe or Wayne LaPierre or James Dobson or Mike Huckabee or any right-wing fucktard shadow should darken the chamber where that commission meets is at the witness table. Just saying. Signed, Bill in Helena, Montana. Marty asking, include the NRA in any discussion? Is that like the idea of including the mafia in discussions about RICO? It is precisely that, Marty. Precisely that. A reminder, we have a challenge on the table. No takers, no responses yet. I hope that will change. In order to take care of tonight's fundraising goal, Dr. Allen has offered a 2-for-1 for the first $50 that come in. That'll take care of tonight's $150 fundraising goal. And there are always bills to pay because, well, we never get out in front of them. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Did you know that I was looking at my PayPal button? Is that why you answered my call?
No, actually, I didn't, but thank you. Hi, Tracy.
I'm just kidding. Hey, hon, how you doing? Seriously, how you doing? I don't think very often people actually ask you. I think we just kind of, you answer the phone, and people just start on a rant, because I know I'm guilty of it, but seriously, how are you doing?
I don't know. I honest to God don't know. If I start on the laundry list, we'll close the show with me bawling, so, you know.
I'm sitting here because I just came from, you know, I was listening to you talk about privilege, and I was at Williams-Sonoma today because I am deciding to start my baking and stuff again, and I'm making English toffee, and I need it, and I'm making spicy hot cocoa mix.
Well, yummy.
And don't be surprised if some of it makes it into your mailbox. But I'm in the middle of Pasadena, and I'm the darkest person in Williams-Sonoma. And I was listening to you while I was in the store, listening to talk about, you know, what's his name's mom and the privilege and her making about $12,000 a year in alimony. And I'm watching and looking at all these white people looking at me like, what are you doing here? Because, see, Mother Lanza would be protecting the horde, you know, because I'm part of the horde. I'm one of those people that they're, you know, these survivalists and stuff like that are being, you know, are stockpiling these weapons for, because, you know, I'm coming after them. And I felt the look, and I'm going, I'm just this year to buy espresso powder. I promise. You know, black folks like to make nice things, too.
You got the look.
I got the look. I got the look.
Yeah, because Collards R Us is on down the strip mall a little ways.
Exactly. Collards and mustard.
And I can say that because I brought some fresh collards and turnip greens and mustard greens into the house today. So.
Well, let me tell you what I did with the mustard greens yesterday. I got some. I got some smoked turkey leg and put that in some water with a bunch of garlic and red pepper and all that, and some garlic salt, and let it cook until the smoked turkey fell off the bone.
Oh!
And then I threw in my mustard green, and to make it really special, I threw in some spinach, too.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Let me tell you something. Now, back in the day, that would have been some salt pork. You know, we know this, but, you know, or a ham hock.
Well, would you just use a little sane olive oil this time or something? Or?
Not even that. Just the water. Just the, you know, plain old everyday tap water that I use in California because we don't have, you know, water, you know, we don't have well water and have to worry about mountaintop removal and stuff in our drinking water. Ooh, did I say that?
Yeah, you did. That's okay. Just rub it in. I'll be crying yet.
But, no, just some plain old water and just a smoked turkey leg. And like I said, I just cooked that bitch until the meat fell off the bone, and then Jan made some chicken with mushrooms and this really nice gravy that she used lemon juice and stuff, and over some plain old white rice. And let me tell you,
yeah, life was good.
Life was, you know, and
hey, I gotta drop something on you, okay?
Oh, you're gonna be dropping me some knowledge, okay?
Yeah,
drop it like it's hot.
Okay, so you know that I was on the road last Friday going down to the University of Tennessee to do a little teach-in there about mountaintop removal.
Okay.
And, you know, that is a deeply cultural place. I mean, there's some serious old American, lots of white folks culture, but it's old culture. And there is culture of color there as well, especially when one takes in the significant Native American population a little ways to the east. But I was talking to an old friend of mine down there, and she told me about something, because whenever we get together, this friend of mine and I talk generally about two things: smoked foods and beer. And I had,
you know, those are wonderful things.
Yeah, I had taken care of the beer end of things because I took her to dearly hoarded bottles of German beer for her to taste that she'd never had. And in return, she told me about this thing or this company, little family-run operation, and it turns out they ship all over the country. This is an unpaid advertisement.
Okay, and you will be telling me the name of these folks.
Yeah, Benton's Bacon.
I'm happy already.
Benton's, B-E-N-T-O-N apostrophe S, Benton's Bacon. They do bacons and hams, and they do it the old way. And they've got a little wood-fired stove that fills their smokehouse with sweet hickory smoke.
Stop it.
And this is bacon for the ages. You'll never pick up another package of Oscar Mayer. You'll never do not order this if you don't want to unless you're willing to never ever be able to contemplate bacon without being and it's like $25 for 4 pounds.
Okay.
And they'll ship it to you. And it's thick sliced bacon and it tastes like meat. And I got a taste of it down there, and I went wild.
Did you weep? Did it make you weep?
Yes. Yes, it did, as a matter of fact.
Well, I did, we have, I love smoked food. My friend of mine smoked a turkey and smoked a ham for me for Thanksgiving. But what I did right before my mom left, I have this thing, like I said, I'm starting to cook again and bake again. So I went to sleep baking about pig candy one night.
Yeah, that's what this is. So,
and I woke up and got my bacon out, thick glass bacon, and my light brown sugar, and I rubbed that brown sugar in that bacon and put it on that parchment paper now and baked that bacon, and I made... Now, I'm lazy, okay? So instead of... And I love my biscuits. I make homemade buttermilk biscuits, but see, I'm lazy, so what I do, I make one big biscuit and I call it a hoe cake. Because hoes got to eat, too.
I remember the movie that came from.
Hollywood Shuffle. Hoes got to eat, too.
Hoe cake. Hoe got to eat, too.
And I made my cheese grits. And, cheese grits and, cheese eggs with the chives and stuff like that. Of course, Jan has never had food like this. Grew up a Jew in Brentwood, so what does she know? And when I presented this to her, what was the funny part? Because my mom and I were eating, and so Jan was like wandering around her plate, like, "So you gonna eat that?"
Mm-hmm. And what you don't, and gonna eat what you don't too.
Exactly. But it's just the one thing that I love about cooking is that it doesn't matter what color I am. Good food, and when I present my food to people, they don't care
who
I am or what I look like. They could give a damn. The only thing they care about is like, can I get more? And it's this universal thing about food and comfort and making you happy. Because
right, and you know what? I have never felt the need to go into my kitchen, Tracy, with a firearm strapped on my hip.
No. I it was so funny because I was doing something, and I had to do traffic school because I got a stupid ticket. Right, entirely my fault. But when you do stuff online and stuff, they have security questions and stuff, and they have a whole list because people, cheat at traffic school. They have other people do it or whatever. So. One of the security questions was, what is your favorite room in the house? And automatically, I just said kitchen. If I was Archie Bunker, I would have said bathroom.
Right, but you're not.
Or even Al Bundy, yes. But I said kitchen because after my surgery and everything, I wasn't feeling well, and I really wasn't, I'm just now really getting back up to par. And while I was cooking, getting stuff ready for Thanksgiving was the first time I've really actually done my serious cooking. And Jan was watching me. And I'm like, what are you staring at? And she's like, you're smiling. You're working up the sweat. You're tired as hell. But she's like, you are smiling. And she's like, that's the smile that I miss, the smile that I haven't seen in 4 months because you were so hurt. You were so in so much pain. And all the stuff that was going on, but yet here's that smile. And I didn't even realize that I was, you know, I was smiling, I was humming. And why? Because I was doing something that I love doing, which is cooking. And I'm good at it. And it's one of those things I picked up the other day, this really interesting guy. He was, him and his girls were coming in from Paris. And this so happened, his brother does this tour of Black Paris. And we got to, and I was supposed to take that tour when I was in Paris, but I got sick. And I'm talking about small world. His brother was the guy that I was supposed to do the tour with. But he was talking about what he's, you know, I was, he was definitely an older Black man, and we were talking about segregation and how he grew up in the South and still became an orthopedic surgeon. And, he, you know, he speaks French and blah, blah, blah. And I said, damn, you may, I feel like a slacker, right? You know, right? And I said, wait a minute. You know what? I raised a beautiful, well-rounded, thoughtful, loving young man, which is my son. He's like, well, shit, you did better than I did. You know, the things, you know, when we, you know, where all the stuff that's the craziness that is going on around us, and we think about the things that, you know, we don't have, and we think about, like, these people that are killing people because their parents didn't raise them with any sense. Their parents didn't say, raise them that, you know, you can't have everything your way all the time. You will have to lose. You will not have to, you can't have your way all the time. You have to lose. You have to compromise. These are things you have to do in order to become a decent human being. And I look about, you know, this woman had all this money and all this, but yet her son killed her. I'm pretty sure he had every privilege, everything he ever wanted in this world, in this life. But her, his, but she's now dead, and so is her child. And
you know, there are a myriad of questions to be asked, Tracy. One of them, of course, is, did she ever wonder? And you know, the young man has been routinely described as autistic.
Okay.
But it sounds more like Asperger's syndrome,
yeah.
Which is an offshoot, I guess. But the question I keep coming back to is, at any time when she was taking him to the range and, you know, standing behind him, and they've got their proper shooting goggles on, and they're observing proper safety protocols with the Bushmaster. And she's saying, now, take dead aim, son. And with your finger on the trigger, don't pull. Breathe, aim, sight, squeeze, son. Was there ever anything in her mind that was saying this might not be a good idea?
And that's my question. That is, you know, if you...
I mean, I sit around here with my own kids and spend, you know, you asked how am I, and I appreciate that. I spend a lot of time castigating myself for my failings as a parent. And I've got a lot of them. And I sit around and I think, I wish I could do this. I wish I could do that. You know, I sit around thinking, I wish I could just be like a Bush, maybe, and just write a check and send my kids to Harvard or Yale, regardless of what their grades are.
Regardless.
You know, let them get in on that. Let them get in on that. Let them get in on that legacy privilege.
Let them, or send them on a mission to France when everybody else is fighting in the Vietnam War.
Right. But of all the things that I have thought. And again, as someone who has owned firearms and has had to deal with them, as I described to Jim, in a fairly unpleasant situation, and having thought to myself, because every parent does, no matter how much time you spend with your children, you say, I wish I'd spent more. Because Margie will soon be 19, Ferg will soon be 17. Doodle will soon be 16. Our eldest is already a mother and in her 20s. And you say, I wish I'd spent more time. And of all the I wishes and all the backward glances, Tracy, I have never once said, gosh, I wish I had spent more time with them at the shooting range. Teaching them how to use weapons to kill other people.
And that's my, you know, I look at my son and I think about all those nights that we had, you know, top ramen for dinner, or the dates that I went on that I didn't want to go on, but I knew if I went out, I'd bring home a doggy bag, you know, because I could feed my child. And with all that, you know, the nights that, you know, we had to sit in the dark, or, you know, because I didn't have the money to pay the light bill, all the things that have happened to me as raising my child, and the things that I wish I could have done and all this, I know I raised an amazing son. I raised an amazing young man.
And even in those moments, Tracy, even in those moments when you might have had a little extra scratch, on that list of things like, let's go out to dinner, or maybe we'll go to a movie, or have steak for dinner instead of hamburger. Hamburger instead of beans. In all of those moments, in any of those moments, and for anybody else within the sound of my voice, a question. Have you ever thought, when there was a little extra laying around, maybe I ought to spend this on another 1,000 rounds of ammunition?
No. I can honestly say...
Because, see, there's something wrong with the brain of someone who needs a house with 10,000 rounds or 6,000 or 1,000 rounds of ammunition.
And that's what I... You know, like I said, look, I don't like guns, but I understand the necessity for them. You know, I've had a gun pulled on me, and, you know, not a fun thing. I can honestly say. But even if I owned a gun, which I would never do, because that's the fight. I'm like, do you even know how to use a gun? No, I said, why would you want a gun? You don't want a gun in my house. I have a temper. See, these are the things that I know. Not that I would ever pull a gun on anybody, but, you know. But, okay, one gun. Why do you need an arsenal? Why
right.
do you need...
Well, it's like I was saying to Jim. In a 5-round revolver, generally speaking, rounds 3 through 5, if not 2 through 5, are superfluous.
Right. Because did I understand right that the gun that the young man used, 700 bullets a minute?
Yeah, if it was fully automatic, it would do that, but it would do hundreds of rounds in a few minutes. You know, that's what made that Bushmaster a so-called civilian weapon is the fact that you can't just squeeze the trigger and have it keep going. It's not a fully automatic machine gun. What semi-automatic means is that every time you pull the trigger, a bullet comes out of the muzzle.
Oh, okay. See, you know.
So as fast as you can pull your little trigger finger, I'm sorry, squeeze. As fast as you can squeeze that trigger, another bullet will come out. And we know that apparently young Mr. Lanza was apparently, the time on the range had not been ill spent, because none of those children's bodies had less than 3 rounds through them.
See, and then you had the right wing saying, oh, you know, we should politicize this and blah, blah, blah. I don't know, I was listening to... Randy Rose, but she was an artist, so her substitute is Nicole Sandler. So apparently, a CNN reporter was approaching Mr. Mitch McConnell and walking through the halls with him and asking him, so when should we start talking about gun control? And she kept asking him the same question over, and he did not say a word. He just kept walking. She kept in stride with him the whole time. But he's going to be down to still present.
No.
So when you have, you know, like you said, I think earlier about, you know, you're not going to really have any strong debates, or not even debates, any strong controls or anything about gun control, because you have too many, you know, people whose campaigns depend on contribution from these companies, which is yet another reason why we should be changing, you know, election law. There's no way in hell I should have to worry about, well, at this point, I don't have to worry about my son going to school. But that's one of the things, because he had heard about what had happened last Friday. I was talking to him, and he, you know, he listens to his music and stuff like that, and he listens to NPR and whatnot and so forth, and our local liberal stations. So most of the time, he just listens to jazz. So when I told him what happened, he was just, he was devastated. And I was, you know, the thing about it, when I was talking to him, the only thing I could think about was, now my son is going to be 25 next year. Me and you are really, you know, the champions of math. Okay, so 18 years ago, I think I got it. He would have been 6 or 7 years old. 18 years ago, I was taking my son to school and kissing him goodbye. I never thought about, and so I walked on his camp on the campus and opened fire. It was never even part of my psyche. Because there had never been anything like Columbine and all these other things that have happened, you know, since. Now, parents have to worry about the one place that they knew that their kids would be safe, the elementary school. You know, you still have those concerns. You have those concerns when you take your kids get into high school and middle school and stuff. You know, there's more stuff that could happen. But elementary school, that's supposed to be this place, because that's where kids are kids. That's where they're allowed their little imaginations and their sense of wonder and all the things that as a child you're supposed to be able to do. But not anymore.
Right, right.
They have now taken away that one place where children should be safe. The place where they're fingerprinted, the place where they learn how to write their names, the place where they have their names on their cubby holes and all that. The safe place where they're allowed to be kids. And now they've taken that away. And yet and still, we have people like Mitch McConnell not even answering about gun control. Because we, you know, when we had that assassination attempt on Reagan and James Brady, right? I was trying to think of his first name, with the James.
Yeah.
And we had the Brady Bill. What happened with that? Wasn't the Brady Bill that enacted so we wouldn't have such things happening anymore?
Right, but
for the NRA, or
right, but the NRA came back and changed all that because, you know, you have to get really, really down on the ground with the NRA to understand where they're coming from. No amount of horror, no amount of blood and gore, no amount of sorrow, grief, has anything approaching an equivalent worth to their money.
And that's the bottom line.
And that is assuredly the bottom line.
And, you know, and isn't that their irony, their bottom line? Because, you know, when you think about the NRA, and there are responsible members, it's not there is the crazy faction.
No, but the NRA doesn't listen to its membership. The NRA listens to the people who write the checks, and that's the gun industry. And the fact of the matter is, the NRA's bottom line is 6 feet underground.
Well, do you figure on the did you hear that the Discovery Channel is pulling their show, American Gun, something? about this family of they own some gun place or what have you, and they're gun manufacturers. And the Discovery Channel is canceling the show.
Right, and I guess Walmart has taken the Bushmaster off of its website, but the reviews are still there. This is a great gun! And Dick's Sporting Goods has said that it will no longer sell these firearms at the location nearest to Newtown, Connecticut, at least for a little while.
Nearest. But here's my thing. Did you hear, after this, you know, then all these figures came out, that I guess on Black Friday that more people bought more guns on Black Friday than they bought anything else?
Right, and that's why any ban of these civilianized military weapons has got to include a buyback. There's got to be a possession element.
And then, like you said, and not only that, but for those people, when something, you know, oh, somebody broke into my house, and I'm doing air quotes, and stole my gun, and then there was a, you know, shooting spree or what have you, okay, well, then you get to go to jail, too. It wasn't me. It was that other guy that stole my gun. Okay. That's fine, you know, because people,
right. You know, after the ban's on and after the buyback's been done, if somebody gets hurt with one of those with one of those weapons, you trace it back to who had it first, and you say, well, they had a chance to the buyback, you didn't do it, so
you didn't file
a police report about it being stolen before the buyback was over with. Let's you go to jail. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, Tracy, I got some more blinking lights, but, dear, it's been a wonderful conversation. And you have a good evening, and thanks for helping out. Between you and one other person, we are only $20 away from meeting Dr. Allen's challenge, and I sure do appreciate it.
Well, you know, I do what I can. And like I said, depending on how this turns out, you might have a package in the mail about with some English toffee and some spicy hot cocoa mix.
Oh, just let me know when to haunt the mailbox. Tracy, you have a good evening.
You too, my dear.
Bye now.
Bye.
Tracy, the lady cab driver calling from Southern California. Kate wrote in a little bit ago. Evening's almost ruined here. Your food porn's despicable. I can smell the smoke, taste it in my mouth. I don't even have any grits in the cupboard, never mind bacon or ham. As an aside, thanks to Bill in Montana for his brilliant reflections. Thank you, Kate. I know the feeling. I went online to find Benton's bacon because it's on my lottery list or something. But mercy, oh mercy. Let's continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, is this me?
It is you.
Oh, it's Lib in South Carolina.
Hey, Lib, what's happening, man?
Oh, man, it has been such a deal. I know that, you know, you with your children, it had to be horrific. Learning of this.
No more for me than for anyone else.
Well,
I mean, you know, we were on the phone with our eldest daughter last night. And it turned out that there was a written bomb threat at our kindergarten granddaughter's school yesterday. There were a couple of other bomb threats in West Virginia yesterday. They've been all over the place. A little kid in Utah went to school with a .22 pistol in his backpack that when it was found, he said his parents sent him with it to keep him safe from something like Sandy Hook happening out in Utah.
What the... I'll curb my language, but... What are people thinking? What are people doing? The freaking insanity of all of this.
I know. It happens to me too. It feels like all you can make are little strangled woodland animal noises.
Yeah. Man. this is my war story. I hold up my hand. No shit. There we were. Okay?
Yeah.
I was a musician in Desert Storm. I volunteered to work with the MPs because they were drastically understaffed. Imagine that. That was back in 1991. We were pulling 36-hour shifts. Or 24 hours on patrol outside the camp. Then we would come inside the camp. We would do 8 hours of access guard. And then between the three of us, we would pull 4 hours of radio operator. So it was a 36-hour shift. And when I was still outside the gate, we got a call over the radio. Some silly damn motherfucker, excuse my French, Sergeant Major has gone off the rails, left a message on his computer inside the TOPS secret security area, and he's gone rogue off the reservation. He is not there anymore. Nobody can find him, but he has weapons. Everybody, so we got this all over the radio. Everybody look out for this guy. He has a vehicle. You know, this was a couple of weeks before we moved into Iraq. We were still, you know, waiting to go in. And so, okay, I see the clock. Anyways, this guy had gone off the rails. So I'm finishing up my shift. I go into a small tent where I am checking people in and out of the top secret security area. And this motherfucker walks in. You still there?
I'm here.
Bob?
I'm here.
Okay.
Time does draw short. I hate to even say it, but it does.
Right. My M16 is leaning against the tent wall, my arm length away from me, and he walks in, and there was nothing we could do. There was absolutely nothing we could do. My partner had his .45 on his hip, his M16 against the tent wall. There was absolutely nothing we could do. He walked into a top secret security facility in a war zone. So all of these motherfuckers who want to say that they want to arm teachers, they are freaking insane.
Same. Absolutely. Absolutely. Point well made, Lib. Got to roll.
Thank you, brother, for taking it.
No, I appreciate you sharing it. Don't apologize. And I hope we'll talk soon over happier topics.
Yes. Yes. Be well, brother.
You too.
Be well.
Bye now.
Bye.
Live in South Carolina. Thanks everybody for your ideas and your contributions to the program in whatever way you make them. Thank you. And have a great night.